is 21-1553 Monroe versus the United States. Is it Rail?
Rail, yes.
Mr. Rail, please proceed.
May it please the court. The trial court erred in finding that the government's position was not substantially justified in awarding Mr. Monroe all the attorney's fees and expenses he requested, despite his limited success on remand. The government's position on the single claim raised in Mr. Monroe's complaint was that there was no material error in justice in the Air Force's decision that Mr. Monroe should be separated from active duty due to his medical unfitness. This position was vindicated in the AFP CMR's final remand decision, which Mr. Monroe did not challenge. This should have resulted in a finding that the government's position was substantially justified. Instead, the trial court awarded Mr. Monroe attorney's fees based on a disability claim he never even raised in court. Amongst other areas,
is there a larger government policy underlying this appeal by the government?
Well, I think it goes to some of the errors that the trial court made in its decision here.
Right, I'm just curious if the reason why the government has appealed this is because there's some broader potential impact that the government's concerned about.
Yes.
Or is it just more, we think on the facts of this one case, this one judge made a bad ruling?
No, there are broader impacts, Your Honor, and it goes to the errors that the trial court made here, such as fundamental misunderstandings about the nature of a Tucker Act claim, the role of the AFB-CMR in adjudicating applications for the correction of records, as well as the factors the court must consider in determining whether an EJA award should be reduced for limited success. So, touching on the role of the AFB-CMR, because that's a big one that could have broader impact. The trial court's finding of a lack of substantial justification here was based upon the AFB-CMR's failure to grant a disability retirement in its first two decisions, and that fundamentally misunderstands the role of the AFB-CMR. Under its regulations, the AFB-CMR is not an investigative body that's charged with finding and correcting any potential error or injustice in the applicant's military records.
But is that sort of what happened here when the medical consultant came in at the late hour and made the recommendation?
Well, the medical consultant came in
to bump up the disability rating from 20 to 40.
The medical consultant had noted in his advisory opinion some medical records that suggested that Mr. Monroe should be put on a profile, and that he should be able to work at his own pace and perform physical activity at his own pace, exercise, and
who made the request to have the medical consultant come in and take a second look at the medical records?
Well, the AFB-CMR made the request that the medical consultant take a look at the records and opine on the issues that were remanded.
And why did the board elect to make that request during the second remand, as opposed to the first remand or the original decision?
The board did request advisory opinions in the first two decisions. I know that there was a medical advisory opinion in the first remand decision, and this is quite common in a case where you're talking about whether an applicant was fit or unfit for duty, that you would have a medical consultant come in and opine on the medical records there. The board didn't ask the medical consultant to opine on whether or not Mr. Monroe's disability rating should be increased. Mr. Monroe was not requesting that relief. The medical consultant did mention the disability rating in his advisory opinion, and in response to that, Mr. Monroe specifically requested an increase to a 40% rating. And during the second remand, this is the first time in the AFB-CMR or the trial court that he had requested an increased disability rating or requested disability retirement pursuant to 10 U.S.C. 1201. So in response to that, the first time the AFB-CMR considered substantively whether Mr. Monroe should be in his disability rating should be increased, and it did in fact increase it at that time. Yet the trial court found that that one of the reasons that Mr. Monroe should be entitled, or that the government's position was not substantially justified, was because the AFB-CMR didn't address this earlier, didn't increase his disability rating in the initial decision or the first remand decision. But the board had no obligation to look at it. Mr. Monroe didn't request it. And in fact, he had stated in his in the initial proceedings that he was not entitled to a medical retirement. So there was no basis for this finding that the AFB-CMR's failure to increase his disability rating and grant him a disability retirement should be a basis for the government's position not being substantially justified.
Is there any case law on how to frame and characterize accurately what is the government's overall position in a given case when trying to figure out whether that position was in fact substantially justified under EJIA?
Well, it's trying to look at the entire.
Yeah, I'm asking if there's case law on that, because right now there's a dispute in figuring out how to characterize the overall government position in this case.
Right, and that's
you want it to be much more, I guess, complaint-centric, complaint-driven. The plaintiff is making a certain complaint, with a certain theory, and then your position is responding to that theory, and that response is how you characterize the government position. The other side would have the government's position be whatever that rating was that the board chose to not disturb, the 20% disability rating.
Sure, and a good case that looks at whether what the overall position of the government is would be the DGR decision that we cited in our brief, where this court looked at a jurisdictional argument that the government had made, and it said, this argument has little merit, and on its own, we might not find the government's position substantially justified based on this one argument. But really, this was a small part of the overall case, and the main part of the case, the government's position was substantially justified. The Gattini case that we cited in our reply, I believe that was from the Sixth Circuit. But that was one where there were really two main issues in the case, and the Seventh Circuit, actually, I think it was, but whichever court it was, said that the government's position was substantially justified on one. It was not substantially justified on the other, but the first issue was the more prominent. Therefore, the government's position was substantially justified. Here, what was clearly most prominent in this case was whether or not Mr. Monroe was fit for duty and should be restored to active duty. That's what this complaint was all about, challenging the AFB-CMR's decision that there was no material error in justice in that determination.
Just to be clear, because Judge Chen characterized your position one way, you want to look at it in one manner, and characterized the Monroe position as directed to disability, but I think, aren't you arguing now that is actually not what the Monroe position was directed to? It was directed to fitness, and if he had prevailed and been deemed fit, that would not have resulted in a 40% disability rating. It would have resulted in his not being separated from his position, correct? A whole different remedy, completely
yes.
different.
Absolutely, Your Honor.
Would not
yes.
have gotten him a 40% disability.
Yes, he could not. He would not have been separated from active duty, exactly. Just like you said, that's correct.
Why couldn't it be that the claims court in this instance had the discretion to look at the larger picture here and see what was going on was certain maneuverings by the board to try to evade defending a position it didn't want to defend, and created that outcome for itself by suddenly granting a sizable financial offer to Monroe that he couldn't refuse?
Well, that's not what the AFB-CMR did. That's not what the trial court found, and that's not what the AFB-CMR did in its decision. It addressed the issues that the court had had ordered it to address on remand and made no determinations that Mr. Monroe should have been found fit for duty or that there was any material error or injustice in the Air Force's determination that he was unfit for duty. And then at the end of its decision, it addressed his alternative request for 40% disability rating and determined that request was in fact well taken and granted him the 40% rating the first time he requested it before the AFB CMR.
So can I get you to focus, please, on appendix page 7? It's a portion of the lower tribunal's decision, and in particular a fact-finding that we review deferentially. And I want to understand if the government believes this fact-finding lacks substantial evidence. In particular, it's maybe the third full paragraph, the sentence that begins, plaintiff has been forced to litigate. Do you see that sentence?
Yes.
Plaintiff has been forced to litigate defendant's position since the Air Force's determination in 2014, which the board ultimately determined was faulty. What was the determination in 2014?
The determination in 2014 was that Mr. Monroe was unfit for duty and should be.
So did the board ever find that determination was faulty?
No.
Right. So but this is a fact finding upon which she predicated her determination of an not substantially justified litigation position, correct?
That's correct, yes.
Okay. I suppose the other side would say, well, the plaintiff has been, that the defendant's position that the plaintiff had been litigating against was the position that the disability, this person gets a disability rating of 20%. And so the board ultimately determined that rating was faulty because they went to 40%.
But that rating wasn't part of...
I'm just trying to get inside what the judge below must have been thinking when the court said what it said here.
Yeah, I mean, Mr. Monroe had challenged the Air Force's decision, the Secretary of Air Force Personnel Council decision since 2014 through the AFB CMR process, but that decision was about his fitness for duty. He did not challenge the VA's disability rating that was applied by the Air Force of 20% until the tail end of the second remand proceeding, at which time the AFB CMR granted it. So that should not be...
Just so I know, when was the 20% disability rating assessed?
I believe it was initially assessed by the VA in, I think it was 2013, though I'm not 100% sure if that's in the record.
But the reason I ask is because she says, since the Air Force's determination in 2014... So right. If his disability rating at 20% was a year other than 2014, she can't possibly be referring to that, could she?
That's what's so confusing, Your Honor. I mean, yes. I mean, the disability rating, I believe it was affirmed by the VA in 2014. But I mean, she must be referring here.
Well, she says the Air Force's determination.
Right. Yeah. No. I mean, and that's the Air Force made a determination about fitness.
Right. So, the only determination the Air Force made was about fitness. Correct. The Air Force didn't make the 20% disability determination, did it?
No.
Right. So when she says the Air Force's determination, doesn't she have to be talking about fitness? I mean, I don't see the Air Force itself deciding how disabled someone is.
I think you're correct, Your Honor, and then that would make the statement that which the AFB CMR also determined was faulty to be incorrect. That's correct.
Okay. Why don't we give Mr. Monroe a chance to respond?
Thank you, Your Honor.
Mr. McKay, please proceed.
Thank you, Your Honor. If I may just start off and address your question rather than my prepared remarks from my colleague's colloquy with you all. I think that in the joint appendix at page 7 that the court was just referring to with the government, the reference to 2014 is, in fact, the determination of the Air Force that Mr. Monroe was unfit because of his diabetes. At that point, he then went to the AFB-CMR to challenge that. And I think the reference here by the trial court that the AFB-CMR ultimately determined was faulty, that was the process by which the Air Force ultimately came to that conclusion in 2014.
I'm confused. It says, plaintiff has been forced to litigate defendant's position since the Air Force's determination in 2014, which the board ultimately determined was faulty. My plain reading of that is that she's saying the Air Force's 2014 determination was later found to be faulty. That's not what you think she was saying?
I think what she's saying is that the 6 years of litigation since 2014 that ultimately led to the board's determination that the process leading to the determination that he was unfit was faulty, as evidenced by the two remands back to the board, the first remand being in 2018 and the second one in 2019. And that I believe, is at least Mr. Monroe's position as to what the trial court is referring to in that part of her decision.
I guess the concern here is that the gravamen of your complaint was always about this challenge to the Air Force's finding that you were that your client was unfit for duty. And ultimately, that prayer for relief to be restored to active duty was something that Mr. Monroe ultimately abandoned. And by jumping tracks from the attempt to get restored back to active duty to an acceptance that he is unfit for duty, but getting this higher disability rating than what had been originally accorded to him. And so in that sense, we don't really have anything in the record. At this point in time, your side is no longer disputing that Mr. Monroe is unfit for duty.
That's correct, Your Honor.
And so that's why I'm trying to understand how is it that the court below can say, well, the government's position was not substantially justified, when at this point in time, nobody disputes that Mr. Monroe is unfit for duty.
I think going back to the original premise of your question, I think the gravamen of the complaint, the so-called claims for relief alleged in the complaint and amended complaint, basically went to Mr. Monroe's allegation that there was arbitrary and capricious decision-making by the Air Force and then the board in review of the Air Force in concluding that he was properly separated from the Air Force with disability severance pay. And to be sure, Mr. Monroe ultimately sought initially a restoration to active duty as a result of that error. But that demand for relief also had an alternative request that he requested several times before the board, that he be placed in a retirement status as an alternative. So I think the transition...
I don't know. What does that last element have to do with anything? I mean, if Mr. Monroe's complaint had said, I want to be either restored back to active duty because it was arbitrary and capricious to put me on disability, or alternatively, this disability rating is too low. It needs to go up to 40% or more. Then I would understand what you're getting at. But this extra element of being moved to retirement status, I think it was because Mr. Monroe is so close to the 15 years of service. I don't quite understand what that has to do with anything.
Is your argument that we should read an inference into his alternative request for disability retirement, the inference being that retirement's only, you're only eligible for it if you're rated at 30% or more disabled, and since he was rated 20%, his alternative request for disability retirement is a sort of in fact request for a higher rating than 20%? Is that your argument?
In Mr. Monroe's complaint and his amended complaint, he did not request, as an alternative form of relief, placement in retirement status. However, in both the first remand and the second remand, in front of the board, Mr. Monroe did, in fact, offer to the board that he would be willing to take, as a corrective measure from the board, alternative retirement status, whether 15-year, which was a program the Air Force was offering at one point.
Can you show me where he first made this allegation, suggestion, claim, however you want to frame it?
I'm sorry, Your Honor.
Can you show me where he first, where in the record did he first make his request for disability retirement?
If you'll bear with me 1 second, Your Honor, I think I can. I'm not having it right at my fingertips at this time, Your Honor. But in the brief, we point out the points where he makes this, both in his initial comments to the advisory opinions in the initial AFB CMR decision, and then subsequent in comments to the medical.
Yeah, the only place I saw this was in response to the second remand, not the first remand. So I'm trying to understand exactly when he introduced this idea of an increased disability rating or disability retirement, either one alternatively, into the dispute. I understand it to only be after the second remand. So I would like you to correct me if I'm wrong about that.
Mm-hmm. Find it, but
the first place I found is A406, if that helps you, but that's again after the second remand. But maybe if you look at that, it'll jog your memory that there's somewhere earlier.
Well, I can't put my finger on it right now, Your Honor, but I think the court has raised a good point, but I will submit that Mr. Monroe, in the record and in our brief, we articulate where Mr. Monroe initially, in front of the AVIP-BCMR before, in its initial decision, said he'd take a 15-year retirement, and then both in comments to the first medical advisor's advisory opinion and the second medical advisor's advisory opinion, in each case, Mr. Monroe made it clear in those comments that he would accept as an alternative some retirement status. And indeed, he was ultimately made that final comment, as noted by my colleague, when the medical advisor said, you know, in the 2020 decision, leading to the 2020 decision, the medical advisor commented in 2019, you know, after all this time, you're right, there was an error in the decision-making process.
So, counsel, the only place I can find that you address this in your brief, let me direct your attention to page 8. And again, this is citing pretty much the same thing I just pointed you to, which is his comments after the second remand at page 406. Am I missing somewhere else in your brief where he may have made this allegation? Because it's kind of really important, since you're suggesting that this is the position of the government that was not substantially justified in part. This is the position of the government that was not substantially justified. But if this wasn't the dispute for the vast majority of this conflict, then it's kind of hard to say the government took a substantially unjustified position on something that wasn't in dispute.
The first one, Your Honor, and I'm sorry if you mentioned this, but on page 2 in the statement of facts, it notes that Mr. Monroe made comments to the AFB-CMR initially, and in those comments, Mr. Monroe requested as alternative relief to his reinstatement to active duty that the AFB-CMR consider correction of his records to reflect his retirement under a force reduction initiative authorizing retirement for Air Force officers for 15 years of active duty service, citing Appendix 254. That's on page 2 of my brief.
But this is just asking if he can be retired early. This is not asking for anything at all. It doesn't even use the word disability anywhere in it.
No, and
so this has nothing to do with whether or not his disability rating should be increased.
And the first time,
nothing at all.
You're right, Your Honor. And the first time Mr. Monroe raised before the board the question of disability retirement was when the medical consultant, in his advisory opinion to the AFB-CMR in 2019, Mr. Monroe said, look, you have raised this issue. I should have received a 40% rating rather than a 20% rating. If you do not restore me to active duty, then alternatively, that's an error for which I should receive disability retirement. That is indeed the first time that he raised that issue of disability retirement in lieu of anything else. However, it wasn't some big shift in his position before the court or the board, because that was just one more step in alleging that the board and the Air Force had engaged in arbitrary and
with all due respect, it's an enormous shift. He argued throughout in his complaint and throughout the entire first remand that he was actually fit for duty, that his 20% disability based on diabetes should not have caused him to be separated, that he was in fact fit and capable. And what he was instead awarded was a higher level of disability. I see those things not necessarily to be mutually exclusive, but to really not be the same argument. I don't see how you can say it wasn't a shift.
Well, Your Honor, what it demonstrated was the process by which the Air Force had looked at his disability process, necessitating two remands because of error. That was arbitrary and capricious decision-making that Mr. Monroe challenged, saying that I was wrongfully separated with severance pay. Now, he said I should have been retained, but the fact is that his demand for relief shouldn't obviate the fact that he was also claiming to get to that demand for relief, he had to actually specify there was arbitrary and capricious decision-making. Otherwise, he'd never get to the point where he could demand relief from the board. He had to demonstrate there was arbitrary and capricious decision-making, and that's what he did. That resulted in two remands, and then ultimately the Air Force concluded, why, yes, Mr. Monroe, you're correct. We have found an error, and this is the error we found. Now, it wasn't the relief that he may have been hoping for, but it ultimately was relief from his allegation of arbitrary and capricious decision-making that the Air Force wrongfully separated him with disability severance pay. Because make no mistake, there's a significant difference between disability severance pay and disability retirement. And I think the trial court, basically noted that you shouldn't confuse the relief sought with the claims for relief. The claims for relief were really claims of error.
Just really quickly, what's wrong with understanding the government's overall position here as the position they took in response to the complaint you filed? The complaint you filed was saying Mr. Monroe should be restored to active duty, and the overall position of the government is no, he should not be, because the determination that he was unfit for duty was correct. What's wrong with that understanding?
I think it fundamentally mischaracterizes what the Air Force position was. The Air Force position was that there was no material error or injustice with respect to the separation process that resulted in Mr. Monroe's separation from the Air Force with separation pay in 2015. It wasn't to the merits of whether or not he was fit or unfit, but it was that process. Unless
okay,
there are any
counsel?
More questions, I'm out of time.
Yep, let's see. Government has some rebuttal time. Please proceed.
Thank you, Aaron. Just a couple quick points. I think that we may have eventually gotten to this during Mr. Monroe's presentation, but it is appendix page 254 where he makes this alternative request for retirement, and as I believe Judge Chen correctly said, this was for a 15-year longevity type of retirement that was authorized apparently at that time, not disability retirement. On this very same page, Mr. Monroe says, Major Monroe's otherwise exceptional health is ironically, in counter to how the boards have depicted his condition, too good and his diabetes too well managed to warrant a medical retirement. So he does mention medical retirement on that page and expressly says he's not entitled to it. And just to respond to the other point about the distinction that Mr. Monroe and the trial court are trying to make about relief versus claim here, the relief requested is an important part of defining a Tucker Act claim, because a claim under the Tucker Act has to be founded upon a particular money-mandating source of law, such as an act of Congress. Here, Mr. Monroe's complaint was founded upon 37 U.S.C. 204, the Military Pay Act, seeking active duty pay, whereas a disability retirement claim is founded upon a separate money-mandating statute, 10 U.S.C. 1201. So these are plainly two distinctly different claims, and the government's position in this case, because his claim was a challenge to the unfitness determination, that's what the government's overall position in this case.
One of the things that Mr. Monroe's counsel argued was that the procedure that the government employed was constantly at issue and was in fact arbitrary and capricious, as argued by his client, and it necessitated multiple remands. Can that ever be a basis for a determination that the government's position is not substantially justified when there is necessitated by virtue of government action the need for in series multiple remands for the government's failure to address and adjudicate and properly resolve issues?
It could potentially be in some cases if the plaintiff ultimately obtains relief on that claim, which Mr. Monroe didn't hear. I mean, the error by that we did acknowledge one error by the AFB-CMR in considering regulations and policy that were promulgated after Mr. Monroe's the final fitness determination in 2014. But then when the AFB-CMR looked at that again during the second remand, without regard to those regulations and policy, it determined that there was still no material error in justice in the determination that he was unfit for duty. So in this case, that's not a sufficient basis for finding the government's position not substantially justified. And the court's focus in the decision was on the disability rating in any event that was not a part of the complaint, not challenged in the complaint. See, my time is up.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you, both counsel. This case is taken under submission.